Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with an Iraqi perspective on the U.S. withdrawal from Iraq. Raed Jarrah, an Iraqi political analyst and blogger, joins us to analyze why Iraq, with enormous oil resources and a greater national income than Egypt, Lebanon, Syria, and Jordan combined, who have four times its Iraq's population, has a lower standard of living than its neighbors. Then we'll examine the political dysfunction in Washington as the House appears ready to reject the compromise to extend the payroll tax cuts for 2 months. Lawrence Michel, the president of the Economic Policy Institute, who is the author of the authoritative study of the American workforce, The State of Working America, joins us to discuss the implications for working Americans if this tax cut is taken away by House Republicans, who appear determined to protect tax cuts for the 1% by holding an extension of a modest boost in the family income for most Americans hostage to an oil pipeline. Then finally, we'll look into the unrest in Kazakhstan, where oil workers have been on a 7-month strike against a state-owned oil company, half-owned by Chinese interests. William Fearman, a professor of Central Eurasian Studies and Political Science at Indiana University, joins us to explain the source of the violence that has left many dead and damaged the independence celebrations of the 20th anniversary of the former Soviet Republic that has had the same corrupt leader before and since its independence. And joining us now is Raed Jarrah, an Iraqi-American political analyst and blogger and architect specializing in post-war reconstruction. He first gained international prominence as the person referenced in the blog Where is Raed, which was written from Baghdad by pseudonym under the name of Salam Pax. While the U.S. was invading Iraq, Jarrah and his family compiled their own posts in the book The Iraq War Blog, an Iraqi family's inside view of the first year of the occupation. In 2003, he worked as the country director for Civic Worldwide, the only door-to-door civilian casualty survey in Iraq. Welcome to Background Briefing, Raed Jarrah.
Thank you for having me.
And clearly with the last U.S. troops leaving Iraq, this terrible chapter for America is over, but obviously it's not over for Iraq, and already there's a political crisis erupting in Baghdad with Alawi's deputies pulling out of parliament, and a couple of the Sunni provinces want to declare themselves autonomous regions, as do the Kurds in the north. Do you think the country's going to hold together?
Yeah, the country will hold together, but the political system might collapse. I have been saying this for the last 7 or 8 years. I was a very big advocate for a complete U.S. withdrawal. And at the same time, I believe that the Iraqi people will manage to run their country. But the point that I always made is that the Iraqi people will manage their country through this government or another government that they choose. So it's not necessarily through the current political system. There might be another political system that Iraqis choose for themselves. I think both countries, the U.S. and Iraq, are far from seeing the end of this conflict. We will continue to pay a very heavy price of this war from the U.S. side for the next generation and from the Iraqi side from the next generation. But ending the U.S. military occupation is a very important step forward.
Well, specifically, the U.S., I think there's about 15,000 Americans, largely contractors, left inside the Green Zone, and the budget for the State Department to maintain that presence in Iraq is $3.5 billion a year. So there is an ongoing U.S. presence. But Raed Jarrah, when you talk about the Iraqi people getting a new government, this is apparently the government in place now under Nouri al-Maliki is widely despised, I understand. It's quite corrupt. There was a demonstration against it that was brutally beaten down. Is there a chance of an Arab Spring coming to Iraq?
I hope so. I think many Iraqis hope that. Iraqis in general are very tired. They are exhausted because all of the wars that they have lived through in the last few decades. And it doesn't seem like there is enough energy to work on a popular uprising again. But people are hopeful that the current energy in the country will be enough to improve or change the current political system, which is a broken, corrupt, and dysfunctional political system, to change it to a better one.
And if people have no energy to bring about a change, where's it going to come from? And isn't there a fairly strong security apparatus there? And when people demonstrated recently against corruption and an unresponsive, dysfunctional government, they were treated brutally.
Yeah, correct. I think the lack of energy comes from the level of disasters that happened in Iraq. We're talking about 1 million people who were killed in the last 8 years alone, and 5 million people who were displaced. So the level of tragedy is so devastating, and many people don't feel like they have enough energy. But that said, I think the U.S. withdrawal is creating a positive force inside Iraq. People are feeling empowered. They would like to see their country run in a better way, and I think many people will stop feeling powerless, like they have been feeling under the U.S. military occupation. That's why, although I realize that the energy is low, I am hopeful that the next few weeks and months will witness an Iraqi political awakening. More people will be participating in demonstrations. More people will be trying to fix Iraq than what we have seen in the last few months.
So Raed Jarar, again, political analyst and blogger, famous early in the Iraq War for his blog Where is Raed, which was written from Baghdad under the pseudonym of Salam Parks. He also wrote the book The Iraq War Blog and Iraqi Families Inside View of the First Year of the Occupation. What do you make, though, of Ayad Alawi's Iraqi bloc pulling out of the parliament? He actually won the election numerically, but was maneuvered out of running the country, and he largely represents the Sunnis. Is that a sign of a major fissure in between the Shia and the Sunnis?
It is a sign of political unrest. Iyad Alawi is a Shiite himself. He does not represent the Sunnis, as we hear here in the U.S. He represents a non-sectarian bloc called the Iraqi National Movement. It ran on the platform of not being a Sunni or a Shiite bloc. It ran on the platform of being a nationalist Iraqi bloc that represents all Iraqis, regardless of their sectarian or religious affiliation. That's why they won the elections. Now they did suspend their participation in the political process because of what they see as unfair treatment by the ruling parties, by Mr. Al-Maliki and other ruling parties. I think many Iraqis are very frustrated that Mr. Al-Maliki is turning into a new dictator wannabe, many people share the concerns of Al-Iraqi bloc. The upcoming days will be very eventful in Iraq. I think we will either see a reconciliation between Mr. Al-Maliki and redistribution of authorities to his partners, or there might be an attempt to have a vote of no confidence and change the Iraqi prime minister within the next few weeks.
Well, you corrected me on the notion that Alawi represents the Sunni. He's non-sectarian, but it's the only representation the Sunnis have in the parliament, my understanding is. There's no question, I think, that al-Maliki's bloc is entirely Shiite, isn't it?
It is more mixed. There is no such a thing as the Sunnis. The Sunnis are not one tribe or one group that is, mutually exclusive. I'm personally half Sunni and half Shiite. Mm-hmm. Iraqis are not divided based on their sects. There are so many other groups that did run on a sectarian platform to represent Sunni Arabs exclusively. There are other groups that run on a platform to represent Shiites. Most of those groups failed miserably, actually. Mr. Al-Maliki's bloc has both Sunnis and Shiites, but it has some sectarian undertones. That's why many people criticize them. I think overall, Iraqis are tired of the sectarian politics. To tell you the truth, I hate using these words. I don't even like to to hear these words anymore. The Sunni this and Shiite this and Sunni this. It's really aggravating. And this is not how Iraqis view themselves or their country. I hope the next few years will witness rebirth of the Iraqi national identity, where these sectarian divisions that never existed before 2003, that they are forgotten and put in the background again.
Well, I hesitate to use the words anymore in this interview, Reid. So let me change the tone a tiny bit and suggest then that the conventional wisdom is that Maliki's government is heavily influenced by Iran. And as we know, Iraq was one of the few members of the Arab League who didn't vote for sanctions against the Assad family in Syria. And now the Iraqi foreign minister is, I think he's in Egypt now, meeting, trying to broker some deal with the Arab League and Syria for some peace arrangements.
Yeah.
But it seems to me that given that Iran supports Syria and that the Iraqi government does, alone, pretty much alone amongst amongst their Arab brothers, it would suggest that the area in the Anbar area of Iraq next to Syria could become a very important area if the civil war in Syria, which is largely between now, again, I don't want to use the word Sunni, but that's the impression you get, is that it's between largely Sunni and Alawite. So give me a sense of what could happen in terms of a spillover if a civil war breaks out, in full blown civil war breaks out in Syria, and how would that
I agree with your labeling of this narrative as the mainstream narrative. This is what we hear from U.S. mainstream politicians and from U.S. mainstream media, and then that's why I think many people, including myself, became more sensitive to using the word Sunni and Shiite, because the U.S. Mainstream politicians and mainstream media seems to see the entire region only based on these sectarian divisions. Sometimes when people meet me in the street and they ask me where I'm from, and I say I'm originally from Baghdad, and they ask me the first question, are you a Sunni or a Shiite? So how rude is that, you know, like, imagine being asked, are you a Catholic or Jew, when you first introduce yourself to someone in the street. So it is very aggravating that the entire region and the entire Muslim world and Muslims as individuals are seen through these sectarian divisions. I disagree with the mainstream media's portrayal of the conflict in Syria being sectarian as well. It might have some sectarian implications. It is becoming more sectarian with days, but I don't think it is a religious civil war like many of the mainstream media try to portray it nowadays. I think the conflict in Syria will have implications and consequences on the entire region, not only because of the sectarian implications of it, but also because of the political and economic and all the other geopolitical reasons that a Syrian civil war or a collapse of the Syrian regime will cause. So it is very concerning, and I think the Iraqi government is unfortunately blindly following the Iranian government's orders to support the Syrian regime. Many Iraqis are critical of both the Syrian regime and their government support of what the Syrian regime is doing inside Syria. And the people are not happy that their government that oppresses them and oppresses their demonstrations is helping another government oppress their people, which is the Syrian government. So it is a very hot issue in the country, in Iraq, and it is causing more political tensions. I think one of the reasons why Al-Iraqiyya, led by former Prime Minister Dr. Iyad Alawi, withdrew is the rising tension because of Syria. I think that was one of the hot issues that Al-Iraqiyya did not agree on, and the ruling party, led by Mr. Al-Maliki, has been taking, you know, a very biased policy in that regard.
So Riyad Jarrah, again, an Iraqi-American political analyst and blogger, he was famous for his blog, Where is Raid, which was written from Baghdad under the pseudonym of Salam Pax, and he covered the U.S. invasion of Iraq in the book, The Iraq War Blog, An Iraqi Family's Inside View of the First Year of the Occupation. And we're talking about the final withdrawal of the U.S. from Iraq. We know so many analysts, particularly here on the political left in America, have said that it was always about oil. And I think even the former head of the Fed, Alan Greenspan, made a similar statement along those lines. The impression you get is that there's something wrong with that picture, because this is a country with largely referred to as the world's second largest oil deposits. And yet somehow the oil doesn't really get to market in the volume that the country has, and it certainly doesn't trickle down to the Iraqi people. So what's your analysis of what's happening with the oil in Iraq?
There are two reasons why Iraqis are not benefiting from their oil in the last 8 years. These two reasons are the foreign occupation and the domestic corruption. I think that is one of the main reasons why Iraqis wanted the U.S. to withdraw completely, because they saw the U.S. intervention as a war that is meant to control Iraq's natural resources. Believe it or not, the Iraqi budget, which is based, almost completely on oil exports. Iraq's budget is by itself is larger than the budgets of Egypt and Lebanon and Syria and Jordan combined. These are four neighboring countries of Iraq. The population of these four neighboring countries is around four times the population of Iraq. And the life quality of these countries is way better than Iraq nowadays. So you can see that there is money being pumped into the system in Iraq. Iraq sells around $100 billion of oil every year. But unfortunately, that money goes to corrupt politicians and to corrupt companies. Iraqis are not really benefiting from their country's wealth at all.
So do you think there could be a breakaway? Because I understand that there are elements in Basra that want to break away and control the oil, and it's happening up in the Kurdish north, isn't it? The Kurds want to have their own access. I mean, they have access, but they want to have their own control over their oil deposits in their provinces.
There were attempts, especially in 2005 and 2006, there were attempts to pass a new oil law that would have decentralized the oil business. And the Iraqis in general saw that as a threat to the territorial integrity of Iraq. If Basra and Kurdistan and other provinces had the opportunity to sell their own oil, they won't have many other reasons to stay united in the country. That's why there was an overwhelming opposition to the law, and it did not pass. So where we stand now, there aren't really any attempts to decentralize oil production and oil. All the oil goes to one central bank account and gets distributed to all different Iraqi provinces based on their capita. So it is a centralized system, and I think, in my point of view, is that it is a better system that has protected Iraq's territorial integrity and ensured Iraq unity for a long time. I don't see any attempt in the near future to change the system or for any of Iraq's provinces to break away from the country.
But just in closing, though, the point that you made was very, very telling, Reid, that the country has greater wealth and GDP than Egypt, Lebanon, and a bunch of other two other countries you mentioned, four of its neighbors, and yet it's not. Its people are much worse off. So clearly, this money is disappearing. It's not getting to the people.
Of course. Well, I mean, you know. Just look at how Iraq looked like in the 70s and 80s. Although Iraq had a war during the 80s, but it was one of the most developed countries in the region when it came to services provided by the central government, when it came to the level of education among Iraqis. Now Iraq is one of the least developed countries in the world when it came to services provided by the government. There is an entire generation of illiterate, uneducated Iraqis. So, unfortunately, you know, it brings us back to the first point that we made, talking about the price of this war. Iraqis will continue to pay the price of this U.S. war for the next decades. You know, these illiterate Iraqis who will become the leaders of the country in a few years. I mean, imagine the level of devastation that occurred in Iraq, that the parents of these illiterate children have PhDs and they traveled all around the world and they have access to, you know, knowledge and like cultural knowledge of their culture and other cultures. And then the next generation will be illiterate, poor, uneducated, never traveled around the world. So there is a lot of work that must be done to fix what happened. I mean, one point that I want to make before we close is that although the U.S. Military occupation is ending, the U.S. moral and legal obligations towards Iraq are not gone. They are not ending. It's not over. I think the U.S. is still must compensate Iraqis to the damage that happened, and the U.S. must hold all of the politicians who caused this mess, they all must be held responsible to what they have done. So the war is ending, but the responsibilities and moral obligations were not dealt with yet.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Reid Jarrah.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Again, I was speaking with Reid Jarrah, who is an Iraqi-American political analyst and blogger. He's an architect. He specializes in post-war reconstruction. He became famous for his blog, Where is Reid?, which was written from Baghdad under the pseudonym of Salam Pax. He covered the U.S. invasion from within the country as his family compiled their own posts in the book, The Iraq War Blog, and Iraqi Families Inside View of the First Year of the Occupation. And in 2003, he worked as a country director for Civic Worldwide, the only door-to-door civilian casualty survey in Iraq. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about how the House appears ready to reject the compromise extension of the payroll tax cut. You are